So today, I am so excited to share with you guys some of the things that I've actually been thinking about for a matter of months for some of these things, and then I'm going to end with my mantra, which I've been actually only working on for a couple of weeks, and so I shared with you a short mantra. Later, we'll get to my personal mantra that I've written, which is substantially longer, but I think it's really important for us to remind ourselves of some of these things in order to, as the theme is today, compose our spirit. And so we're going to start today by going through something that you are very, very familiar with. I'm sure when you heard that the scripture today was the Ten Commandments, probably nobody jumped up and said, "Yes, so exciting." So new, so fresh. No, it's definitely something that we probably read this morning. And you're like, yep, I know that one. I know that one. Oh, maybe I forgot a little bit of the wording to that one, but I remember it. Yes, very simple things. But so I want to start by reminding you of the importance of the Ten Commandments, of these commandments. Because if you try to put yourself in the place of the people who were first hearing this, you know what? When they heard that, that was new. Like, there was a time when the Ten Commandments were new, were fresh, were different. You see, the Ten Commandments were the initial, I would say, setting of standards. Like, this was the moral ground that people were putting their foundation in at this time. Before this, really, there was no basis for morality. It was just kind of, you know, what felt right, what they thought was right, what they had maybe worked out by themselves, that sort of thing. And so it's kind of interesting to think clear back, like now the Ten Commandments are so simple, such a foundation of our society even, like these are what most of our laws are based on. And so what did people base it on before that? Well, not much, honestly. Like there was a time when this was new and fresh. And that's why it needed to be stated. And so this is also, as it's described in the bulletin even, this was a covenant. This was a covenant between the people and God, the Hebrew people and God. And so I would also suggest that this was the beginning of an expression of who the people were agreeing to be. You know, it was very simple back then to say, yeah, we don't commit murder, we don't, you know, adulter, we don't do all of these things, we don't even lie to one another, all these things. This is who we are agreeing to be. And this is also really important to remember that, you know, it's one thing to agree it when you're being calm, when you know, perhaps in my experience, it's when we wake up in the morning, when we are deciding who we are going to be that day. It's really important to remember some of those things because sometimes in the heat of the moment, yeah, it would have been really tempting to break some of those very basic rules. So that's part of why these are so important. And then we move on a little bit throughout the history that we see in the Bible, and we move on to Jesus. And you know, Jesus went a bit further than the Ten Commandments. Jesus went, in fact, a lot further to move on, to progress with explaining who we are, who the covenant people were meant to be. And again, these were some more moral guidelines. This was continuing to build the moral universe that we live in. These were also just statements of how we are to interact with one another. You know, for example, how we are to behave if we see somebody beaten and lying on the side of the road, what we are meant to do to help that person. You know, he gave so many examples of how we are to interact with one another, when it's both when it's easy, when we are just, you know, strolling through our day, and also when times get difficult. And so those things are really, really important to remember as we go throughout our lives. And so then I want to introduce for you another aspect of describing who we are. Because, you know, the Bible says a whole lot about who we are meant to be. And we have the decision to either listen to that, what I would call narrative, that story, that description of who we are, or we don't listen to that narrative. And so there's this idea that I want to introduce to you that I call a narrative and a counter-narrative. Because in our world today, we have so many voices telling us who we are, what we are doing, what our place is in the world. And some of those voices are really positive. We have, again, the voices of the Ten Commandments. We have the voices of Jesus and his descriptions of how we are to relate to one another. But then we have the rest of the world, pretty much. And we know those voices. We know the people who are telling us that we aren't good enough, that we are a mistake in our very being, that we just constantly make mistakes, that, you know, in one way or another, we just aren't good enough. There are so many of those voices in our world today. And so that's where I would suggest that we need to make sure that we have our counter-narrative already worked out in advance, because otherwise these voices are going to come along and that narrative is going to be the thing that we decide does describe us, that we will follow that narrative. We will take that into our identity. And so to further explain this, again, there are so many things in this that I'm very excited to share, because this next one is something I've been researching very extensively for about 5 months now. Because I heard a narrative, and then I started to question that narrative. And this narrative was an age-old narrative that I've actually dug up some historical documents and found the exact same narrative throughout the ages. And that narrative is, man, young people today, they just aren't as good as they once were. Man, young people make so many mistakes these days. Ugh, you know, you got to throw in that eye roll, young people. You know, people have been saying that since biblical times. Like, I have found that in the Bible so many times now. And so I had that moment like, wait a minute. If people have always been saying this, how true is that statement? Like, how do we back that up? What's going on with that? Is that just a feeling that kind of grows in us as we get older? Well, I would probably say yes, based on my research. So I'm a statistics person. I love statistics, especially statistics about people, about us. And so I decided to really dive into this topic, just to explore this narrative. And you know what I've found out? And here's my counter-narrative. Young people today are amazing, like truly amazing. I have researched, like, you know, I went into the crime side of things. I tried to research every specific crime that I could come up with, from the most extreme of like murder and sexual assault, all the way back to like misdemeanors, that kind of things, different rates for that over time. And then I tried to go into more of the moral type things, sexual promiscuity, teen pregnancy. This morning I finally thought of another one. I've been trying to think of more for ages now. High school dropout rates. All of them, every single rate that I have come up with to research, has a downward trajectory to where people today, young people today, are at the lowest rates that have been measured, that I can find statistics for. It's amazing to see every single rate down. Now, this is a very different narrative from what I think most of us are hearing. That young people, oh man, they make so many mistakes, they do so many dumb things. You know what? In the overall, let's think back to when we were their age. Did we make those mistakes or similar mistakes? Oh yeah. Oh yeah. But in the overall, young people today are amazing, like truly amazing. And now let's think this through just a step further. What difference do you think it would make if we had the first narrative as opposed to the second narrative, and we're talking to one of these young people? How do you think they're going to react? If we are telling them, oh man, young people, you guys just, you've got it all wrong. You know, you just mess up all the time. Let me tell you, I work at Canyon Hills Center. There are so many kids today who are stuck in that narrative and who decide that that's what I've been told all my life, so that's what I'm going to live into. I'm free to make mistakes because, you know what, I'm just a screw-up. As opposed to, man, young people are amazing. Like, they are socially active, socially conscious, politically active. Man, young people are amazing. Now, how do you think that that person's going to react? How do you think that their narrative and their idea, their perception of themselves is going to change? So that's one giant example, I think, of where our narratives need to change, need to shift. And so I know for all of us, we all have those voices and those people telling us, we probably all have certain things that really catch us, like, oh, I'm not good enough in this way. There's this thing that I've been working on for ages, and man, I can't seem to do it any better. And so I want us to really consider, is this a negative voice? Is this a voice that's holding us back? Or is this the voice of God? What would God say about who I am and how I'm supposed to live my life? And so this is the narrative and counter-narrative. And I hope we realize that if it's a negative voice, if it's the voice that's holding you back in life, that is not the voice to listen to. That is not the voice of God. And so I want to give you a tool today, because of course, some of these things are kind of high concept, just how we think about things. But I want to give you a tool, because I don't think that anything should go without a way to put it into action. And so this brings me to a personal mantra. So my challenge for you is that in the near future, whatever that may be, the next day, week, month, year, whatever, start to work on that personal mantra. Try to find those things that you tell yourself or those outside voices that you are listening to way too much that you need to have something better to tell yourself. And so I'm actually going to step through my personal mantra so that you can get maybe an example of the things that we do tell ourselves that we need to work on, maybe, because a lot of this is a reaction to what I normally hear from myself, from others. Again, I work in a pretty high-stress job where quite literally at least once a week, somebody tells me I'm not good enough, I'm not doing my job right, you know, I'm just there for the paycheck. That's one of those common phrases that I hear at work from the kids who are just so frustrated and so stuck in those negative voices, negative narratives. So I need this to remind myself of the voice that God would have me saying to myself. So I'm going to walk through this line by line a little bit so you can get a feel for what maybe God should be telling us, what we should be telling ourselves and reminding ourselves of who we are and especially why we are here. Those were the two things that I wanted to answer for myself, who I am and why I'm here. And so as a reminder of this is my identity, I began with, I am Ben. It's a very simple statement, but I wanted to reinforce, this is who I am. I am Ben. And the second thing was, I am enough. So often in life we hear, you're not good enough. You know, you fail in so many ways. No, that's not the good voice. That's not the voice of God. I am enough. And then I am loved. Despite how we may feel sometimes, despite how we may wake up in the morning in just a funk, no matter what, we need to remember, I am loved. And then to take it a step further, I am worthy of love. You know what? Not only am I loved, but that's worthwhile. I am worthwhile to be loved. Which then, yet another step further, I am worthwhile. I have value, essentially, is what I'm trying to say. And then I started to move into some of the issues that I work on for myself and for others. So I said, in the face of pain, I will seek healing. That's so hard. When we're experiencing pain, when others are experiencing pain, it's so hard not to get stuck in that. So I want to remind myself, I will seek healing. And I said, in the face of injustice, I will seek restoration. Again, for myself and for others. There's so much injustice in the world, and I think this is one of the most holy Christian acts that we can do in our lives. In the face of injustice, I will seek restoration. And then I said, in the face of depression, I will seek joy. This is one of those issues that I struggle with personally, but it's also one of the things that I feel led to work on with other people, to help other people with. So I wanted to remind myself, in the face of depression, I will seek joy. I will move through my problems and put them in the past. This was a sentence I spent like a full 2 days just working on, focusing on. Because I wanted to say, it's so easy to to just skirt around problems, ignore it, turn a blind eye, and just kind of try to move on. But no, no, no. That's not the healthy way to deal with things. I will move through my problems. I will work on them. And once I've worked on them, once I've moved past it, I'll go ahead and leave it in the past. That's one of those things I need to remind myself. And it said, I will embrace chaos, yet find peace. Oof. There's so much chaos in the world, so many things to throw us up into disarray. And you know what? Instead of completely fighting that, I just said, I'm going to embrace it. And in the midst of the chaos, I'm still going to find peace. That's who I'm deciding to be. I will respect every single person's full humanity. This is a whole sermon in and of itself, in my opinion. I've had such issues when people don't respect another person's humanity. And now that they're the two sides of that, respect as well as full humanity. What I mean by that is, yes, we all have flaws, we all make mistakes, but we also all have these wonderful, vibrant things about us. And we have to take that whole thing, that whole person, and respect them for who they are. Then I went into the idea of purpose. My life has purpose. Sometimes that simple sentence is all we need. My life has purpose. I will show love to all, despite what is done to me. This is one of those things that I have to remember. You know, like, I know I'm called to show love. And you know, it's pretty easy to show love to the people who are loving me or even to the people who are pretty neutral to me. But, oh, man, when that person cuts you off on the interstate, love's out the window most of the time, right? So I will show love to all, despite what is done to me. I will find ways to help strangers. I almost said when I was writing this, I will help strangers and just left it nice and simple like that. But then I said, oh, wait. You know, sometimes it's really easy to help strangers. Like this last week, one of my neighbors was stuck like perpendicular in the road on a snowbank. and I could either like skirt around them to get out or I could stop. And like, honestly, if I would have just went around, that would have felt pretty weird, right? Like we're Midwesterners. That would be rude. And so, you know, it was great. It was wonderful to help somebody. But then I said, you know what? We need to be finding ways to help strangers, not just the convenient ways or the things that would be almost odd to avoid helping them. No, we need to go a step further. I will find ways to help strangers. This is a very Christian act, in my opinion. I will find ways to build up those close to me. Oof. I think this is one of the things that has bothered me the most inside of Christianity. Especially throughout college and seminary, there was one example that I saw repeatedly that bothered me so much. It was these wonderful Christian people that had this wonderful love for other people until you got to their roommate. And then their roommate or spouse or boyfriend, girlfriend, whatever it may be, was the person that they treated worst. Oof, that's rough. So it's really important to remember, I will find ways to build up those close to me. And then flipping it back inside, I will accept help from others. Sometimes it's easy to help other people, but when it comes to us, oof, we don't let them in, do we? We won't accept that. We won't let that happen. No, it can be really important to remind yourself, I will accept help from others. And then moving into some more of what makes me me, I will not put myself down. Oh, man. Again, it's that narrative counter-narrative. Sometimes when we make a mistake, we say, oh, I'm the worst. I always do this. No, that's not the voice you should have for yourself. I will not put myself down. Then I will seek to grow while appreciating the person I currently am. Oh, man, I focus so much on growth and change and developing and progressing that when I don't succeed in those things, that can be really hard for me. And so it's really important to remember that while I'm seeking to grow, I still need to appreciate who I currently am. Then this really gets into what, in my opinion, makes me me. I will not be held back by others. There have been so many examples in my life where I heard somebody tell me, no, you can't do that, or no, you shouldn't do that, or no, that would be ridiculous to do that. So, of course, what do? I'll do that thing, of course. So many examples of that. And you know what? I think that's great. Like, all of these things have been pretty positive things for me, and so I will not be held back by others. But you know who does set limits? That's this next line. I will not set limits for myself. Ultimately, when it comes down to it, I am the one who holds me back. So it's really important to remember that. I will not set limits for myself. And then, I will always be more. This is actually something that my best friend and I have been talking about for years. It's become kind of our slogan of be more. We always, just in every situation, we want to be more. We want to be better. We want to grow. We want to change. I will always be more. And then I finally wrapped it back around. After all of this, you know, growing, changing, doing the things that I should do in the world, I needed to remind myself at the end, I am enough. I am worthwhile. And finally, I am Ben. So hopefully this has some value for you. Hopefully you can maybe add some of these things, some of these lines, some of these commentaries, narratives, whatever you might want to call it. Hopefully you can embrace some of this, because I heartily believe that what I just spoke, these were the words of God. These were the things that God is constantly trying to tell us. You are enough. You are worthwhile. You are loved. And so I would encourage you every single day to compose your spirit, to center yourself in God, to center yourself in prayer. I use the word mantra for this, because mantra is actually from the Buddhist Hindu belief of this is part of meditation. So I think of this as a very meditative act. Center yourself every day, because there will always be those negative voices coming at you, and you need to be ready for them. You need to have something to tell that voice, no, I am enough. I am loved, no matter what. And so may it be that you can always fight those voices, and may it be that you can always remember the voice of God telling you, you are loved, you are enough. May it be so. Amen.